Good morning, everyone. I'm very grateful to be asked to return here to the Torah Way. I was spoke here last year, actually, for the first time. Then I came back, and for some reason they asked me to come back. Not exactly sure why, but I assumed that they knew that there would be snow, and they thought that who is going to get to come in the snow? So they probably figured they would get me, so that's what you're stuck with. But Baruch Hashem, I see that there's a great turnout, so I'm starting to wonder about the stability of all of you. Why you have come here? People will listen to the tape later and they would think, well, it must be some blizzard out there in London. Huge, you know, but for New York we're used to it. But for here, I'm very grateful that anybody showed up. Yesterday, actually, I was in Manchester, and Rabbi Yaakov Hillel spoke right after me. And I began yesterday by saying that I felt like a bowl of Cheerios yesterday. So people looked at me and they wondered why. I was glad they wondered. And I said that many years ago, my son, Shmuel, was about 5 years old, and he was sitting at the breakfast table. And I come downstairs and I see he has a box of Cheerios. And he's pouring it into a bowl. He was a little boy. And he's pouring, and it's all over the table. He keeps pouring. It's all over the table already. I'm wondering, how long could he do that? I'm standing there watching him. So finally, I eventually had to stop him. I said, Shmuel, I said, what are you doing? So he looks at me with all innocence in the world. He says, Happy, I'm trying to get to the prize. There used to be prizes at the bottom of the cereal, or else kids wouldn't eat it, you know. So, of course, they don't put the prize at the top of the box. That wouldn't make any sense that he put the prize at the bottom. So I said yesterday that since I was speaking before Rabbi Yaakov Hillel, so I'm the Cheerios. I said, no, you got to get through the Cheerios to get to the prize. But today I think there's nobody speaking after me, so you're stuck here. I have a message for you today. The message for you is a pessimistic one and an optimistic one at the same time. The world, you probably have realized, in case you hadn't realized, the world has gone insane. I'm sure most of you have realized that. It's a very strange world now. I was reminded the other day of a great story I was told about a fellow who came to a new town. He was a university president, but they gave him a mansion. They gave him a beautiful, beautiful home. And he comes to the beautiful home, and he moves in. Everything looks wonderful. There's only one problem. There's no water. Goes to the faucet, turns it on, garnished. Nothing. So what does he do? He goes to the phone book. He looks up a plumber, calls the plumber. The plumber comes over, looks around, says, okay, I can take care of it. Fine. A few minutes later, he comes in, says, Professor, he says, all taken care of. He says, oh, great, let me see. Goes over to the faucet, turns it on. Water, wonderful. Turns to the plumber, says, how much do I owe you? He says, $250. $250? You were here for 6 minutes. $250? The plumber says, yeah, that's what I get. He says, you know, I'm the university president. I don't make $250 in 6 minutes. So the plumber says, sure. He says, when I was the university president, I also didn't make $250 in 6 minutes. Yeah. It's an olam hafuch, Rabbi say. It's an everything is turned upside down. You know, the plumbers are making, nothing against plumbers, but as, you know, it's just a completely opposite, upside-down world. I just look around, because I live in New York, I guess, and I see maybe more insanity than anywhere else. But I look around, and I travel a lot, and some of the insanity is almost expected, and some of it is just beyond belief. People, what they spend money on, for instance... We're going to talk about technology in a minute. I know. But we'll talk about technology anyway. And I look around. Some of it is completely crazy. People spend money on the most ridiculous things in the world. There's a man by the name of Warren Buffett. Now, Warren Buffett, you may know, is maybe the second richest man in the world. And he happens to be a very special person. He's a tremendous philanthropist. Gives away loads and loads and loads of money. Very unusual man, very unusual person. But people like to speak to him, and he has a thing every year. He does it for tzedakah. I'm not talking about those people who don't. I'm not talking about those people, about Warren Buffett, who is actually a very special person. But he auctions off every year the privilege to have lunch with him. People pay money to have lunch with him. And this year was a new record. The auction went for over $500,000. So Warren Buffett is raising money for tzedakah. He gives all the money away. He gives all the money away every year. Beautiful. But somebody is paying $500,000 to have lunch with this man. You know, I hope it's a good lunch. You know, I hope it's costing him $500,000 to do that. People pay money for this. People pay money for just ridiculous things. There's eBay today, you know. People sell things on eBay. Somebody sold his family on eBay. Really true. Yeah. So people sell body parts for advertising. Yeah. There's a person who sold his forehead, and for 1 month, for 30 days, you could write anything you want on his forehead, and he would walk around and display it wherever you like. You know, this is, and people pay money for this. There's a man who sold his middle name on eBay. Sure, he didn't like it. He said that his middle name was named after his grandfather, and he had a fight that was with his grandfather, selling his name. Doesn't want it anymore. You know, talking about the crazy things in this world. That's not the worst of it. The worst of it, unfortunately, and that's the pessimistic part of it, is the Yiddishkeit. And what some people call Yiddishkeit. It's an amazing thing. There are, you know, I don't want to promote them, but there are denominations, as they call them, within Yiddishkeit, that has gone so far to the extreme, that has gone so beyond the pale of what anyone could expect, and they still call it Judaism. There is a certain group that have followers of this group, you believe it or not. Before you know it, by the way, it's going to be Pesach time. I know you can't believe it, and the women who are listening don't want to be reminded of that. But it will be Pesach very soon. There are people who call themselves Yidden, and they put on the kara a challah roll. Not only that, they don't take chametz out of the house. On the kara, they place a challah roll. And they say, because, why? They don't want the bread to feel bad. 8 days without bread. It's politically incorrect. It's not right. So they put the challah on the... It's unbelievable. There is a man, calls himself a rabbi. I've read this. I know it's true. This is a quote from him. He calls himself a rabbi. He says, Yom Kippur makes me nervous. I have no problem. That sounds good to me. Yom Kippur makes me nervous is very good. Sounds firm to me. Then he says, why? It's hard to even say it. He said, I feel Yom Kippur is not so much about God forgiving us, it's about us forgiving God. The rabbi. There's a Jewish day school in Manhattan. In their literature, a Jewish day school, in their literature, it says, quote, we do not consider belief in God to be an important factor in our selection process or in our curriculum. What do they consider important? You don't have to believe in God, not to be a student, not to teach, nothing. Nothing. It's a Jewish day school. There are kids, our kids, our brothers and sisters, fellow Yidden, are sending their kids to this school. Unbelievable. There's a man who wants to do away with the entire movement of Bris Milah. Let's do away with it, he said. The whole process is so archaic, he says. Now, he says, we don't want to do away with the entire ritual, just the cutting part. Get it? I guess the bagels are still okay. Smoked fish. That part of the minig is still acceptable. I mean, we laugh at it, of course, but we really should be crying. We should not be laughing. I don't blame you for laughing, but we should be crying. It's that kind of world. And part of what this, the craziness of this world, part of it, I'm not saying it's all due to it, but part of it, I believe, is the tremendous technological advances that we have made. And I'll tell you why. We have tremendous technological advances, you know that. We don't have to go through all of them with the iPods and the MP3s and the cell phones and the fax is a joke already. And, you know, I mean, all these tremendous advances that we have so much knowledge. And I believe that all of this fabulous technology is wonderful. It's wonderful. And it's there. Let's tell you, we should use it as best as we can. We just had a few seconds ago, I had a fellow call Nebuch over here. People walked out. They have tremendous technology. It works. They come in a second. It's tremendous. And we should use it for that. However, there's another side to it. And the other side to it is that the more advanced we get, the more in danger we get, and the more complacent we get. The more advanced we get, we now have a new and greater Nisayan than ever. And that Nisayan is Toichi V'yatzim Yadi, that we feel that now that we know so much, and we are so strong, and we are so powerful, and the knowledge is so incredible, so now we think that we are in charge. Look how much we know. Knowledge is power. This is a huge problem now for us. You meet people all around. Whenever you meet them, they expect that they should know things so well that there's no longer any room for doubt. There's no longer any room for not knowing. I believe that years ago, that in generations previous, they understood that there are certain things that we will never understand. They understood that. They accepted that. There are things we're limited in our knowledge. We're supposed to feel limited in our knowledge. That helps our bitachon and emuna. It puts that space between us and the Ribbono Shel Olam, so we can look at the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, where are we? Me'anu. What are we? We're nothing. But nowadays, the more advanced that we get, the worse off we are. There's no longer any room for us to say, I don't know. We do have cloning. We have cloning. We're cloning beings, animals, people. We're creating. You have people walking around thinking now that they have tremendous egos and that, you know, who knows? They think they're God himself. They are. They're creating. So we go into the lab and we create. We create people. We manufacture. We have organ transplants. We have genetic engineering. We can do whatever we want now. So how do we make room for the Ribbono Shel Olam in our lives when we ourselves are responsible for it? That's what makes it so much more difficult. To me, that's the most powerful thing. And the Kadosh Baruch Hu, then, if you could say, Kaviyachol, is then forced to say, I need to remind you of how helpless you really are. Because you need to understand that you're not God. So then we have the tsunamis and the hurricanes and the 9/11s and all these things, these catastrophes that happen to show us how helpless we are, to remind us, because now we need reminders of how helpless we really are. If we wouldn't be so helpless to begin with, perhaps the Ribbono Shel Olam wouldn't be forced, so to speak, to remind us all the time. I looked outside at the weather today and I see the sun. I see the snow. I saw the sun for 5 days in a row here. I took credit for it, by the way. And that's why it's snowing today. Because I'm still here. I'm going to leave tonight if they let me. But I look outside at the snow, and you're reminded of how helpless you are. You know, I was in New York about 10 years ago, and we had a tremendous blizzard. We had 26 inches of snow. I don't know how much that is, inches over here. Mm-hmm. It's big. Okay, it's very big. Over 2 feet of snow. Tremendous. And I come outside, and people can't walk. Your mamas can't walk. Can't even open the door to your house. It's mamas piled up. The next day, I was listening to the radio on the news, and they said they were giving an estimate for how much did the snow weigh. If you collected all the snow in the tri-state area, New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut, in one day, and if you put it all on a scale, they have a way of doing that, I guess. You know, today you can do anything. And I don't think they actually did it. And they figured out how much of the snow weigh. So I said, this I have to hear. How much of the snow weigh? So they said, now we're going to tell you. So what did? They went to a commercial. And you have to wait again. Then finally, you know, people are interested. They come back and they say that the scientists estimated that the snow that weighed that day that fell weighed 100 million tons. 100 million tons of snow. A ton is 2,000 pounds. Kadosh Baruch Hu is up there in Shemayim looking down at New York and says, okay, a little snow today, let's see. Sets the dial, you know. 100 million tons comes down. By the way, 2 days later it was all gone. It was a heat wave, it was warm. Not even a zecher of the snow. Kadosh Baruch Hu has to remind us, I'm in charge. I'm still in charge. You're doing genetic engineering in your laboratories, but I'm still in charge. You have to know that. But there's no room for it anymore. Last night, I have to tell you, last night, I was giving a talk in Manchester, 12 hours ago, I was giving a talk in Manchester, and I was speaking to a group of about 25 students from the University of Manchester, many from Leeds, they came down, and I get a little bit of a feeling for what's happening out there, and I'm talking to these kids, and we're giving the famous discovery seminar, we're talking about Maamar HaSinai, and evidence of the Rebbeinu Shlomo who wrote the Torah, and they're looking and they're listening and they're trying, but they're struggling. And what are they struggling with? They're struggling with this same exact problem. Because when we finish the entire seminar and we have a talk and we're discussing things, what do they do? What are they saying? They say, yeah, but you know, you haven't proven it 100%. Yeah. They know so much already. They're studying science and engineering and philosophy, and they know so much that if we don't show them a video of the Rebbeinu Shlomo, they don't believe it. That's what we have to do. That's what we have to do today. You haven't shown it to me yet. I'm doing this a long time, and for many years, we didn't have this problem. You didn't have to show people as much as you have to show now. But nowadays, you have to. They feel like, you know, if, once we know so much, so now, you know, how much more could you teach me? And how could we accept something that's not so clear? Muna pshuta, gone. Gone, muna pshuta. You have to mama show it to them. I had a fellow come up to me last night. Lovely young guy. He's learning Nebuch philosophy at the University of Manchester. And he's discussing with me. He must be in his early 20s. This is a few hours ago. It's still pains me. A Yiddish kind. And he's standing there afterwards and he talked to me and he says, you know, I heard what you said tonight. It was interesting. But I have to tell you, he said, I'm an atheist. I don't believe in God. I said, Why not? He said, it doesn't make sense. It's contradictory. The existence of God on this world is contradictory. It makes no sense to me. So I said, so what do you believe in? So he says, I'm a pantheist. Pantheist. He says, yeah, I'm not a panentheist. There are two types. There's pantheism, there's panentheism. Then he goes into whether he's a classical pantheist or a biblical pantheist or a naturalistic pantheist. There are all different types of pantheists. Now, pantheism as a whole, I'm not going to go into it. I know a little bit about it. That's because I've heard it. So, what do I tell him? So I don't want to embarrass anybody here, but my good friend Reb Shimshon Sokin taught me something. And last night, I used exactly what I taught him. So I said to him, it's very interesting. You're studying philosophy, and you made a conclusion. There is no God. You're a pantheist. You have all these conclusions. Let me ask you a question, I said. How about Jewish philosophy? Did you study any Jewish philosophy? He says, like what? I said, Sadi Gaon, Rambam, Ramban, Luzzatto, Maral, contemporaries, Rav Dessler, Rav Huttner, anything. Looks at me, he says, who are they? I said, what are you doing? I spoke directly to him. I just felt so impassioned. So what are you doing? You're reaching conclusions. You're studying all this philosophy. How about starting with who you are? You're a Jew. Look at Jewish philosophy. If you want to make your conclusions after you studied all of those, fine. But if you want to be intellectually honest, you want to reach conclusions, study religion first. He says, but they don't teach those people at the University of Manchester. I said, you're darn right they don't teach those people at the University of Manchester. I said, you may have to go elsewhere to do that. But you can't reach conclusions about that. He thinks he knows everything. He thinks he knows nothing. He knows nothing. He's always a pantheist. So he knows nothing. This is what we're up to. This is what we have to be doing today. Unfortunate. It's very sad. There are so many different possibilities. When you look at the people today, what we can do for them, and how we can inspire them, and how we can makarav them. There are so many different ways that we could do it. But most of the time, you look at some of these people and you say, the job is basically impossible. I mean, how much can you do? How much kirov can you do? We're trying. There are so many different kirov organizations. Baruch Hashem, they're all successful. They're all making a dent. No question about it. But it's huge. It's huge. The kids that are going away, the adults that are going away, millions and millions and millions never. So with all of that, it's not likely that we're going to be able to do enough unless people, not just the quote kirov professionals, unless people also get involved in it. Unless people think about, is there somebody that I know who's not from that I could talk to? And it's a little bit of an appeal that I'm making today, and I use this forum for that, and whoever is listening, those who are here, those who are not here and listening in other venues, that we must start an army to be able to think about who can we talk to. I would guess, and I don't know most of you here, but I would guess that all of you know people, whether it's your tailor or your lawyer or your nephew or your niece, and many of them are in our own mishpachas, that we have to stop hiding. We have to stop saying, I can't. We have to stop saying, I don't know where to begin. And we have to open up a dialogue of some kind with them. Now you'll say, but I can't teach them Reb Sadia Gaon. I'm not an expert on Maral. I never really learned Reb Dessler. I mean, where am I going to start? Let me tell you, most of the people, I don't want to scare you, 90 ruba de ruba of the people you're going to meet are not pantheists. You don't have to debate pantheism with people. I didn't debate pantheism with this fellow last night. I couldn't even debate. I didn't know what I'm talking about. But just to be able to get a relationship, to get a discussion, something, so many of us are just, we're just afraid. We just think it's not for us. It's for the professionals. It's not, because it's not going to work. The only way it's going to work is if everybody does something. People are afraid to say, I don't know. I want to tell you, I have been in places. I have been in places where I have used I don't know as a kirov strategy. There are places, more than once, when somebody, a fellow who I saw, was very, you know, he was like really struggling, and he would ask me a question, and I knew the answer to it. But I have to tell you, I didn't say that. I didn't give him the answer. I said, you know, I really don't know. It was not the emes. And the only reason that I told him I don't know, well, actually, there were two reasons. One reason is because as soon as I said I don't know, he looked so happy. He stumped me. He stumped the rabbi. You know what a feeling that is? No, he has a good kasha and the rabbi doesn't know. Everybody turns around. You know, it's gevaldik, right? In the story of Rabbi Yochanan, the Gemara that says that he used to sit on seven cushions giving his shir. And any time a Talmud asked a kasha that he didn't know, he took out a cushion, he gave it to the Talmud. And the Gemara says that there were times there were Talmudim sitting on seven cushions, and the person was sitting on the floor. That's beautiful. That's what chinuch is about. So he's sitting, because he stumped the rabbi, he's sitting on seven cushions. So this fellow asked me a kasha. I say, I don't know, he feels great. Number one, he feels great. That's number one. But number two is, I said, now that I don't know, though, I'd like to find out and get back to you. Sure. So he gives me his email address. Talk about communication. And now I can get back to him. Now we have a dialogue. Now we have a communication. I don't know isn't a problem. I don't know is a strategy. Not a problem. I develop, I'm not going to know. I say, wonderful. The less you know, the better. Because when you don't know, then you'll be forced to look it up, and by the way, and then you'll find out something that you really didn't know when you looked it up. It'll be good for you too. And then you don't know, and you have something. Oh, and now we have a relationship. That's how you makarev somebody. You don't makarev somebody. You ask makarev, you give him a teretz. Okay, now he's convinced. Tomorrow morning, he's putting on tefillin. That doesn't work that way. You're not going to convince somebody by telling him answers. You convince people during their relationship. So I have no time for a relationship. I have so much to do because I have so many of these new time-saving devices that all of you now have more time, right? Right? Anybody here has more time than they used to have? Isn't that strange? We have less time. For much less time. We have no time for anything because of all these time-saving devices. So we're doing so much. We're doing so much, we're burning out. You know, this week is the parsha of burnout. I spoke in the teacher's training. It was MST, it's called. The teacher's training, a very lovely place. And I told him, this week, Parshas Yisro, it's the parsha of burnout. Mevoil tiboil. Yisro is telling Moshe, you're going to get burned out. It's teaching us there is such a thing. And many of us are doing that. But we're doing so much that we have to keep up with the computers and with all our things, with the beepers and I don't know, there's no room on the belt anymore. We have to keep up. And because of that, we're doing so much, you know what? We're burning out. And the Torah teaches us that burnout is a problem. It's a very real problem. It teaches us today. And they pointed out two things, by the way, about this burnout. Not only is burnout a problem, but the Torah decides to teach us that where is burnout a problem? You know where? With Moshe Rabbeinu. Not some stam yid. Oh, yeah, people, they burn out and they burn out. Burnout means, you know, you're psychologically and physiologically destroyed and you just can't anymore. And it destroys your communication, your relationships, your work. Makes you have no interest in anything. It's a major problem. So the Torah says, not by any stam fellow in the street, it's Moshe Rabbeinu. In other words, this could happen to anyone. Moshe Rabbeinu has burnout. And not only that, but Yisro tells him, not only for you, but I taught the Chola Am Asher Imach, everybody with you. I said, what? Everybody with you? They're not burning out. All the people are coming. They can bring their cases to Moshe Rabbeinu. He's sitting giving Din B'Mishpah to them. How are they getting burned out? The truth is because when you burn out, you affect all the people around you. Everyone else also does, because you're unavailable now. So they also will be affected. But a lot of Kira's professionals also get burned out. Why? Because they need help. They need help. They need help from everybody. They're trying. I'm telling you, I watch it here. I spent almost a week here, Baruch Hashem, in England, and I'm watching here for Eishet Torah, and the work that they do, it's just phenomenal, I just have to say. But they're working from 14, 16 hours a day. They can't carry the load. This week's parsha, no loyalty boil. They're getting weird. And they need an army. And the army is that if everybody gets that message, if everybody says, I'm going to do a little bit, I'm going to talk to somebody, I have a cousin, I have an uncle, I have a niece, I have a neighbor, I've always been afraid to talk to him, I go to the gym, I see somebody there, I know he's a frayid, I'm always afraid to talk to him. It's just opening up a dialogue and being friendly. That's all. Out of that relationship, you wouldn't believe what could happen. Sounds impossible, but it's not impossible. Everybody can do a little bit. I know it's late, I just want to end with one verse on doing the impossible. To my knowledge, in the Torah, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam never asks for the impossible. We have a trial. Every Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't give you any sign that you can't handle. Kodesh Baruch Hu doesn't ask for things that are impossible, but there is one place, there is one single place in the Torah that a Kodesh Baruch Hu does ask for the impossible. I believe it's the only one. That place is when Rebbeinu Shem talks to Avraham Avinu, and he says to Avraham Avinu, Pasuk says, Vayoytse oisei hachutza. Kodesh Baruch Hu takes Avraham Avinu outside and he tells him, Vayomer habetna hashamayma, look up to the sky, uskara teichadim, imtuchal lispar oisam. Go outside and count the stars, if you can. If you can. Baruch Hashem knows you can't count the stars. He even tells Avraham Avinu, I'm going to ask you to do the impossible. Uskara teichadim, imtuchal lispar oisam. So he's telling him, I know you can't. Go out and do it. I know you can't do it. Vayomer, says the pasuk, Vayomer loy, kol yehi azarecha. Your children will do that. What? So many people can't count the stars. One day, Klal Yisrael will be so great. We all know the pasuk. Like the Tekhovim. Yetz Hashem, the Kharos. That's how it'll be. Zotah Meir Shapiro, the family of Racha, I have another pshat in the pasuk. I'm going to tell you this pshat, you'll never forget it, I guarantee you. Because it says in the pasuk twice, Vayomer, seemingly for no reason. It says Vayomer, Habet Mahashamayma, Usfara Tekhovim, in two plus lesson, and then Vayomer again. Because Rav never stopped talking. Why would you say it twice? Vayomer Tov Yisrael. You know what he says? Incredible pshat in the pasuk. But as Rav was telling Avraham Avinu, picture the scene. Avraham Avinu, go outside, count the stars. In tucha, lisparosim, if you can. So Avinu says, what should I do? Because Rav, what should I do there? Should I go out and count the stars? You already told me it's impossible. So what's the point? Avraham Avinu says, Kadosh Baruch Hu told me to go out to count the stars, and if Kadosh Baruch Hu told me that it's impossible, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go out and do it. I'm going to go out, I'm going to do the impossible. So he does. Goes outside. 1, 2, 10, 150, 500, 1,000, 100,000, 1,000,000. He's counting. Kadosh Baruch Hu is watching this. He says, what are you doing? What are you doing? I'm just giving you a metaphor. I'm just giving you a metaphor that you can't count the stars. What are you doing? Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you're unbelievable. I told you to do something impossible, but you didn't say, I can't do it. You didn't do that. You went out and did it. You went out and really it counted. You took me literally. You said count the stars, and I said it, and you're doing it. So Kadosh Baruch Hu says, you know what? Your children are also going to do that. That's the bracha. You went out and did the impossible, your children will also do the impossible. Your children will take what you did today, and they will also go out and attempt the impossible, knowing full well that it can't be done. Secular Jewry, millions and millions and millions of people, millions of them, losing them, vanishing. We look at it, we say, it's impossible. So I say to you, your children, they can do the impossible. Avraham Avinu showed you that. We have a bracha. A bracha is, don't make such bargains. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, go do it. Just go out and do it. Kadosh Baruch Hu will take care of the rest. With that bracha, I hope that we will attempt the impossible and achieve the impossible and bring the Gula Shleim Ha'ev Yomein.